Thank you for staying with KHSU today and throughout the remainder of this holiday month. This is the final Tuesday of 2017. It's the end of one year, moving toward the beginning of the next. And the cycle year to year to year can be dizzying. I'm Wendy Butler, and this is Art Waves. Today's program is about Lori Goodman's exhibition titled Journeys 3, which is at Eureka's Black Fawn Gallery through February 10th. And she's giving a talk and demonstration for the public on Saturday, January 6th at 4:30 at the gallery. Lori has installed several sculptures at Black Fawn. These works are actually structures, more so than sculptures in any sort of traditional arts sense. These structures are made out of myriad types of natural material. Lori built two of them out of an invasive plant whose branches she clipped and stripped and then wove together to form twin huts. Lori Goodman visited with me this past Friday. I think a good place to start is going to be the story behind the exhibit.
That's always difficult and interesting. I'll start from the beginning. I had said to myself, I'm not going to have any more exhibits until I go to my studio and I make something, and then I say, aha, this is great, I'm going to exhibit it. Because I always do it the other way. I always have a show and I focus and I make for the show. So I was just at Black Fawn. In this mind, I'm not going to have any more exhibits until I'm ready and the work is ready. And I walk into Black Fawn and I see the space and I say, oh my God, I have to have an exhibit here. And I have to make a structure of some sort, or a nest, or a dwelling, or something that fits in that space, in the enclave space. That's all I saw. I didn't see the walls. I just saw that big space that you see on the left when you walk into the gallery.
Yeah, and just to let our listeners know, if you haven't visited Black Fawn Gallery in Old Town Eureka, it has very high ceilings and a very large wall space for artists to exhibit. And so when you walk in, artists are invited to install pieces that go very high off the ground.
16 feet.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And so perfect for Lori Goodman.
So that's how it all started. I wasn't going to have any exhibits. Went to zero to in a year. So I arranged for the exhibit, and Kevin was really excited. He was there. The owner of the gallery was there. So I had a year to think about what I was committing to, although I had a very clear vision immediately of having a very large, large structure of some sort, hive-like, hut-like, you know, just a big dwelling-type space. And then I saw it immediately on the wall, because I didn't want it to be literal. I didn't want anyone to say, oh, is this a house or is this a beehive or whatever one would conjure up. I just wanted it to be taken out of any literary context. So I saw a structure and then I saw it on the wall and then I started to work on it.
That's interesting. So you saw the structure in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the first question that I wrote down, well, I didn't write it in some of the ideas I sent over to you. I didn't actually write this one, so. But I have to ask you this because I was looking at, and you please tell us the title of this one. I was looking at, it looked like a twin pieces,
the
biggest ones. What are they? What do you title?
It's called conjoined huts.
Conjoined huts,
uh-huh.
And so. The first thing I thought of when I was looking at these was, she just created something that is twice as big as she is.
That's true. Maybe I have a Napoleon complex.
But how does, let's talk about what that particular structures, what they are created out of.
They're created out of Cotoni aster, which is a disastrous tree. They call it Cotoni disaster. It's a It's an invasive tree that's all over Humboldt County. I have a lot of acres of it. It's just a terrible, terrible tree. It's pretty. It has little red berries right now, and the birds love it. But it's very invasive, and it gets entwined in everything. And usually I work in bamboo or round reed or even some willow. And I was about to try to find some willow to make the structures out of, and I looked around my field, and I thought, oh, my God, this is green, so it's going to be flexible. So I went out and bought myself a new clippers and started cutting down branches, and it was fabulous. So the huts are made out of cotoneaster branches that I stripped, and then I just built structures out of them, like you would an A-frame or any kind of a structure, or a hive or a hut or a, you know.
And the architecture of art.
There you go.
and I was just thinking, because they are so big that if there was an opening in the front, you could almost go inside and it could be a shelter.
It is a shelter of some sort, sure, right? It could be for, some people call them cocoons, some people call them nests, some people call them dwellings. One of the best compliments I got was, we were talking about this, people were saying what they were, and one friend said, there are no nouns. And I thought that was wonderful. So that made it feel very much from the heart or from the gut.
There are no nouns.
Right.
Explain what that individual meant by that.
Well,
there are no nouns.
It was an emotional reaction rather than a specific literal interpretation of anything.
Oh,
I liked that, yeah.
Yeah.
It was very flattering.
But you know what's interesting? You talk about how you put it together, but what sort of adhesive's the wrong word, but how do you hold it? How do you glue it?
Well, I took the cotoneaster branches and I tied it together with twine. I do a lot of looking at how things are made. That's one of the things I kind of like to do. So I looked at YouTubes, and I have a lot of books on structures, and I looked at how things are made, and I twined them together. And the insides are really bizarre. They're just all sticks hanging out. And I tied them all together, and then, of course, I make the paper. So I make the paper, and I was making a shelter, and I think when people make things, they use what they have on hand. You know, some people use straw, some people use mud, and I have paper. So I made the paper to cover the structure. Bees use paper to make their hives. Beavers use mud to make their hives. You know, so anyway, you use what you have in your environment. And I have paper, and I just kept making paper, and that was pretty automatic. I can't explain to you where I got the color from, why it's that color. At that point I go pretty much on automatic, you know. So in each paper there, I made hundreds of sheets of paper, and each one was made individually with a different pattern or a different, you know, a little bit of a different color configuration. And then I start putting, I call it dressing the structures. So then I start dressing the structures with the paper. The paper's about 18 by 24 is the size of each paper sheet. And I can make them bigger or smaller. Sometimes I do, but it's just easy. I seem to be used to that format. And then I can tear them up in different sizes if I want to.
Now, you said the paper is what you said 18 by, you mean like 18 inches by 24
yes.
inches?
Because, yes.
Because the work itself is
12
how many
feet? Yeah.
Yes. it's huge. Well, if you said you go on automatic, but you've had to stop it somewhere. Did you stop it based on how much wall space you knew that you had
exactly.
and ceiling area you had?
No, I made
no.
it. The confining factor was the door. Because the door was only, I think, 3 feet wide and a normal size. What is that? 7 feet, 8, 9 feet tall, something like that. So the largest section is 9 feet, which is the height of the door. And that was as big as that was the largest piece I could make. And I made it in two sections. I wanted it to be in one piece originally. I ended up liking the two, but I had to make it to fit through this very small doorway.
And so if the door had not been prohibitive,
yes.
you might have continued.
I don't know what I would have done, yeah.
No. And so you make your own paper. Now, how does one make paper?
Well, I start with something called Kozo, and this is kind of what my talk is going to be about when we do the thing.
Yeah, the talk, and again, you're going to be giving a talk at the Black Fawn Gallery on January
6th.
And what time?
At 4, I think it's at 4:30, right before Arts Alive. So you can come to the talk, go out to dinner, and do Arts Alive.
Oh, okay, sounds good. And so you'll be talking about Kozo. And so please explain what that is.
It's a plant that is easy to grow. It's harvested every other year. It started in Japan. I don't know if in Thailand for sure, in Korea, and a lot of Asian countries it's grown. It's basically what people refer to as rice paper. But it's not made from rice straw. There is a rice straw paper, but Kozo is now very popular. You can find it identified as Kozo in art stores and things like that. It's a very long bark, and I buy it from a paper making supply place, and I cook the bark, and then I pound the bark into a pulp, and then I make the paper. And some of the pieces I made for that piece, I did make very large. I have a mold that's about 5 feet wide and 8 feet long. And I did make a couple of really big sheets to cover some of that piece. And then I just do that. You can make a mold and a decal, it's called, and you kind of pick up the paper in the sieve.
Now, in your professional life or in your artistic life, did you begin by making paper and then you got into making structures?
No, I began by weaving. So that I've always loved fibers, you know, cloth and yarn and string and stuff you find on the ground, and you know, and natural dyes fascinate me, all that, and all that happens in weaving. And so when, you know, in the 70s when we first came to Humboldt County, I was weaving, and then a friend and I opened a yarn fiber art supply store where we taught weaving and spinning and dyeing. And then the weaving got to be expensive, and it was very frustrating because you can't see the finished product until you're finished. So, and that wasn't good for me. I'm not very exacting, and I'm way too impatient. So when I discovered paper, it was perfect. I could do what I was trying to do on the loom, but I could do it much faster, much cheaper, and with greater satisfaction because I could see the outcome much quicker.
And so from weaving then came paper.
Yeah.
And then from there came the exploration of creating these different structures.
Well, maybe. Yeah, I don't know what the direction. Well, then I decided to go back to school. While I was weaving, I decided to get a master's in art. And at the time, there was a weaving department at Humboldt. I know, nobody knows that. Yeah. But I didn't like it. It was just too technical. And then I discovered the sculpture department, and I went and I said, okay, I really want to get a degree, not for the degree's sake, but because I knew it would help me focus on what I wanted to do. And I wanted to do it in sculpture because that was my interest, not necessarily the weaving itself was a wonderful device, but I was really interested in the outcome. So, and I wasn't satisfied with the outcome, but I was with the paper. The paper, you can mold it, you can fold it, you can make armatures for it. So I was really always interested in the sculpture.
Lori Goodman. Her exhibit, Journeys 3, is at Black Fawn Gallery in Old Town, Eureka. You're listening to Art Waves on KHSU. I'm Wendy Butler. Lori Goodman's natural sculptural structures reflect her looking at the smallest details of how the world is composed, and, in turn, she becomes a composer and creates works of art from the natural world. And not only have you all always been interested in the sculpture, but you, in particular, you're interested in, as you were saying, the natural fibers or the natural,
right.
The natural world. Again,
right.
You know what I mean, like the branches and all of the greenery and the things around us and the things that are underfoot.
Right, right.
And then you're interested in incorporating that into your sculpture as well. So also, and you've mentioned this in promotion for this exhibit, you have done or still do a lot of hiking You spend a lot of time in
outdoors,
nature,
right,
outdoors.
Mm-hmm.
Is that why you're titling this exhibit Journeys? But it's not just it's Journeys 3.
Well, it's internal journeys as well as external journeys. It's journeys to different lands, and yes, it's a lot of hiking and hiking, as you know, is very meditative, and hiking is a way to be internal and to have a journey, as well as looking at what's around you and looking at your environment. And I was telling my daughter earlier that I really enjoy. I was someplace once, and I was in Africa, and there was a big pile of something, and I was told it was rhinoceros dung, and that fascinated me. I know they're circles about an inch, maybe 2 inches in diameter, and they had holes in them. And you know, you've heard about dung beetles, but I didn't know what that was. So the beetles come, they eat the nutrients out of the dung, and they leave these rocks with holes in them. So the rhinoceros basically have a common toilet. They all go to the same place, and there's this huge pile of these little hard rocks that have been eaten by the dung beetles. And I just picked them up and put them in my pocket and brought them home and looked at them for ages. And all of a sudden, I noticed I was making pods, these big seed pod-like things, maybe about 2 feet, and they all had little holes in them. And I thought, oh, well, that's interesting. So I seem to internalize things that I see. And I don't do it directly. I don't say, oh, now I'm going to make rhinoceros dung. And another cute story was I was someplace and I saw this stuff hanging, and it was turned out to be yak cheese, and I loved the way it looked. It was just pleasing to me.
Yak cheese.
Cheese. And it looked like about 2-inch squares, and it was hanging on ropes, and the ropes were about 6 to 8 feet long, and it was hanging from like a rafter, but they were clumped in great big pieces, so they looked really fabulous. So I took a picture and I sent them to my daughters. One said, "Mom, why do you have a sculpture in Bhutan?" I was in Bhutan. And the other one said, "Mom, that looks just like your work." So I thought, well, no wonder I'm attracted to it. There was just an aesthetic to it. It had nothing to do with where I was or anything about it. There was just an aesthetic. And I realized that very simple things are very beautiful. And maybe that's why I'm attracted to those. You know, they're also very sophisticated in their simplicity. You know, this is a great way to hang the cheese. Why not? It's a good way to hang it. You could cut off the pieces as you needed them. Just very ingenious.
Yeah, so the combination between the aesthetically pleasing and also the practical.
Right.
The utilitarian.
Yeah, in a way. But then I don't think about it once I start to work. It's just kind of something that interests me. And then once you start working, what you have absorbed in your life comes out in your work.
Now, you were saying at the start of this interview that you had decided not to exhibit any longer or something?
No, I wasn't going to. You can do it two ways. Right? You can arrange for a show without any work finished, and just so you're already committed to the show, and then you have to make the work. So I wanted to do it the other way this time. I wanted to make a bunch of work to see what would happen, because if you're focused, you work differently than if you're just kind of experimenting. So I wanted to experiment for a while and see what came out of it.
But you didn't.
No.
You did it the other thing.
Yeah.
You found your space, yeah, and then you created for the space.
Exactly, which I often do, yeah.
And do you often experiment? You've had plenty of situations,
oh, yeah,
where you've experimented and developed things and then found a location?
No.
No.
That's what I'm trying to do. That's what I'm trying to do. That's what I'm going to do now.
Now that you have this show up,
right,
now you're going to take some time to do some experimenting.
Right.
Well, when we talk experimenting, do you mean in terms of with different forms, different
Maybe.
Materials?
I don't know. No, not probably not different materials, because it's really hard to learn the skill of a different material. And I know this material, but who knows what will happen.
Now, another thing that I'd written down is, and you've talked a bit about your background and how the weaving came first, but going even further back, when you were younger, did you create any kind of art, sculpture, drawing? I mean, you know, what was art making in your earlier life?
You know, I really didn't do very much. I was fascinated. Again, it was the same thing. I was fascinated by building. I remember I didn't have the vocabulary to say I wanted to be an architect, but I can remember my parents dragging me away from building sites. I had a friend whose parents were building a house, and I loved being there. I remember my mother saying, you can't leave them alone, they're working. You know, I liked how bridges were made. I liked to watch the, I talked about beavers a minute ago, I'd forgotten about that. I loved to watch beavers making dams. That, I just liked, I was always interested in that. But as far as drawing or painting, no. I was just, you can see, I'm sitting here moving my hands. It's just more physical.
Yeah. So for you, it's not about I'm gonna sit down and create a work of art. It's,
no.
I want to build.
Yeah.
And this is what may or may not come out
of
it.
Right.
You wrote, and I copied and pasted one of the something you said that was included in promotion. This is what you said. This is what you said. I am fascinated by process. I want to know how the roof is thatched, how the hut is made, where the natural dye comes from, how the hive or nest is constructed. These basic constructions are at the root of who we are and what we can do. Also very sophisticated in their simplicity. So I like that. Are at the heart of they're at the root. I like the way you said root, you know, as in at the root of who we are and what we can do. I found that very inspiring.
Thank you.
And so again, it's about looking at how it or how we are constructed.
Right. And how we're going to ultimately survive.
Okay, so a little bit more. There is I didn't get a title of this. There's a totally different kind of work you have at the exhibit, and it's on the other side of the conjoin.
The red piece.
It's red. It's almost sort of flat, which is very different. And so, what is that called, and what is that constructed out of? How.
I don't really have a name for it, and I don't know where it came from, and I can't even remember why I did it. I mean, I remember loving making it, but I don't know why. I don't know where it came from, but I knew exactly what I was doing. I don't know much about it. That's Kozo. That's made from Kozo, hemp, flax, pampas grass, and maybe some yucca that I have in my yard. And I have a machine, it's called a Hollander beater, that beats up, it's what they make paper out of professionally, but mine's a lot smaller. And I beat up all these fibers, and I made a stencil, a leaf-like stencil, and I just made all these pieces of paper, and then sewed them onto the canvases. And I made a room out of them. This is the second time it's been shown, I have to say.
You said you made a room?
Yes. How? So the walls, I made this covered the walls of the room. So you walked into the room and it was just this red-walled room. And that was kind of what was in my vision when I made the piece.
And so what we're looking at in this exhibit is sort of part of a room.
Yes.
Part of what would surround you in a room.
Yeah, exactly.
So again.
Yeah.
And then, again, in your January 6th talk, are you also going to be giving a demonstration?
I will. I'm going to demonstrate because I work in a medium that's so fascinating to people, so I will do a paper-making demonstration. It's very basic, and so people can see how it's done. And I used to do a lot of workshops at Humboldt and at CR, but I don't do them anymore.
Well, when you were doing your workshops, what were some common, do you recall any common question or questions people would ask about the process?
No, because it's pretty straightforward. You know, this process, it's like weaving. There's basic rules, and then once you learn the basic rules and you know how the fiber is going to react and how the medium acts, then you can abstract. You know, then you can go, okay, I'm going to change this and I'm going to do that, and it won't fall apart, and it will... Or maybe I want it to fall apart. So it's all very basic. And people make beautiful things out of handmade paper. They make stationery and picture frames and beautiful paper to draw on, which is very, you know, wonderful. And that's a nice thing to do with it. I just use it as my medium. You know, I could have used clay or leather or fabric or something else. But I just happen to like the paper, and I like making it. It's very meditative and it's very beautiful. The questions are very basic. I mean, the process is very basic and very easy. And it's nice. It's a nice process. Yeah.
Lori Goodman, Journeys 3 at Black Fawn Gallery, 2nd and G Streets, Old Town Eureka, through February 10th. And she'll give a talk and demonstration on Saturday, January 6th at 4:30 p.m. before that night's first Saturday Night Arts Alive. Regular gallery hours are Thursdays through Saturdays, 11 a.m. to 7 p.m., and showings are available by appointment. For information about exhibitions and artists, you can visit blackfawnart.com. That's Art Waves for today. Join me for the next regular broadcast Tuesday at 1:30 p.m. You can listen anytime online at khsu.org. You can also download podcasts of the program from iTunes. I'm Wendy Butler. Until next time, thanks for listening.
Bebop, the cool school, hard bop, 60s blue notes, the young lions. If it's straight ahead, you'll hear it on Gone Sides. Tuesday nights from 8 to 10 right here at 90.5 KHSU, your jazz station.
Electrodes were attached to their arms, chest, their heart.
Radiolab. It's not just for your ears.
Your torso will stay alive.
Yep, it's a full body experience.
And it just gripped me.
You're suspended.
Oh my God.
Kick it.
Puts all these feathers on his body and climbs up to the top of a mountain.
The smell doesn't bother you guys?
What smell?
Tuesday evenings, beginning at 7, here on KHSU.
Thank you.